was the name you gave right after Ferris?
David Ferris, Michael Warnicka.
Warnicka, okay. Right.
And Ken Stubbs.
Hey. So,
And Yahovi Atum was on the line, but I see he's been disconnected. I see what's going on there, Milton.
Okay. All right, so what we have is a draft of a proposed report, and we have a new proposal on the table. I would like to begin by discussing the basic outline of the report and see how much agreement or disagreement there is on that. And then we can go to this proposal to see if any additional blending can take place. So the report basically is divided into three sections. One of them talks about eligible third parties and hasn't changed much, except for the section on special sectors, in which, based on our discussion last week, I tried to encapsulate that discussion. And then the degree of access granted, the definition of the types of access was sharpened up, and there was a concluding sentence that sort of indicates where we are, as far as I could tell, based on our discussion, in terms of what is agreed, what is supported, and what is not agreed. And then there's this new section on the constraints of Port 43. Well, let's talk about the eligible third parties first. You know, there's this agreement statements, which are bulleted. Does anybody wish to take issue with anything that's being stated there?
This is Steve Metallitz.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the second agreement statement, there was agreement that suitable mechanisms for global certification of an organization status as an LEA do exist, e.g. Interpol national agencies. I think that kind of overstates how far we got in that discussion, at least in my recollection of the calls. It was a proposal in one of the proposals. There was the idea that the national agencies of Interpol would handle this. I think we also heard that that's not practical in some countries because it doesn't take into account in a federal system the state and local agencies. So I think there was some discussion about these mechanisms, but I don't think there was agreement that those mechanisms exist.
There was not agreement that suitable mechanisms exist. Okay.
I mean, there was discussion about them, and I think if we had further discussion, we might develop a suitable mechanism, but I don't know that we have one yet.
Okay. Does anybody have any additional comments about that issue? And Carol Bird, you're on the line. Do you agree with that?
You know what? I've looked at a lot of the discussions in the last couple of weeks and a lot of the statements that have been made. My position has been only to provide information where either I think something can't legally be done or isn't achievable. In terms of whether or not there are mechanisms could be used to do this, I think we're too early in the process to say conclusively that we've delved into it. I think we're still at the discussion and proposal stages. Now, in looking at everybody's emails, I understand there's a lot of frustration because everybody wants it to move forward. Yet I still believe that whenever we look at putting any proposal forward, it still has to have viable options as opposed to, you know, being arbitrary statements that laws that exist already have to be changed and so on and so forth. So I think we can say that there might be suitable mechanisms, but we'd have to certainly examine them in much more depth to determine whether or not they are viable and whether they would meet everybody's needs. I certainly can't speak for every police agency, nor for every country. And so I'm a little hesitant to make definitive statements that could have impact without having significantly more information from a larger part of the sectors that are affected. Did that help, Milton?
Yes, it does. I think, yes, nobody is expecting anybody to speak for all stakeholders in their particular category. So I think that, you know, I understand your caution about that. And you might be just telling me that we need to change the language a bit, that we can say there was agreement that suitable mechanisms for global certification of an organization's status as an LEA might exist, but would have to be examined in more detail, or maybe a statement that we agree that certification as a status as an LEA would be easier than certification of other categories of actors.
I think, Milton, if I can jump in on this.
Yeah.
Ross, I think the solution here in terms of this document is to phrase this in terms of a policy statement. The sentence that we're discussing here seems to be...
You're kind of fading out, Ross. Can you get closer to the mic?
Sorry, is that better?
Yeah.
So to repeat, I think the answer that we're looking for here is to frame this up in terms of a policy statement as opposed to an implementation requirement. The preceding sentence is certainly a policy statement. I have my doubts as to whether this one is or not. It seems to me more of a statement of an environmental condition, and we're kind of disagreeing over whether or not that environmental condition is true or not. Perhaps if we rephrase it as a policy statement, saying that something to the effect of there must be some way to certify or something along those lines so that we could move on and leave those implementation details to the later phases.
So you would prefer something like, as a policy statement, sort of, we should find or seek out suitable mechanisms for global certification?
Yeah, something along those lines. I think that kind of addresses the concerns I've heard so far.
How do you feel about that, Steve?
That we should explore suitable mechanisms? Sorry, could you repeat what the phrasing was?
Could I repeat what, please?
Could Ross repeat what he suggested go in there, or?
I didn't make a specific suggestion on text. I'm still one cup of coffee behind the rest of the world, so anything I could suggest probably wouldn't make much sense at this point.
No, but I agree that if it's a statement that there would need to be a suitable mechanism and that should be explored, I would agree with that.
Good. Okay. Okay, let's go on to the private parties paragraph. Was I correct in saying that there was no agreement, or was that too strong a statement?
Milton?
Yes?
Yeah, it's Ken. I just want to make sure. Would somebody please define again exactly what constitutes a private party? Is a private party an individual person? Is a private party a intellectual property agent, lawyer? Exactly how are we defining that?
It's all of those things. It's anybody who's not an LEA or a governmental agency.
So, in other words, a financial institution would be considered to be a private party here.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. The same. It's a shame that we. Well, you know, I'll just resurface this again. It's a shame we can't come out with some sort of a policy. Or at least a recommendation that we try to establish a methodology for stratifying private parties, because I think we're tossing a lot of babies out with a lot of bathwater, and I think there's a significant variance there in that. And I think we may need to make it abundantly clear in the preface exactly how we're defining this to...
So this is Dan. I would suggest that by not defining categories within the private sector, we're actually opening the possibility of becoming certified to anyone that has a legitimate interest based on their actual need rather than some sort of general categorization. I tend to think that adding a layer of categorization actually confuses the issue more than it helps the issue. If you're going to say, well, all banks should get access, well, maybe only some banks should get access or something like that, depending on the ones that actually have a need for access. And it should be based on a specific need rather than the category of institution or individual.
Now, you know, let me respond very quickly to that. I'm concerned about that because from a practical standpoint, I don't like the idea of self-certification for what constitutes a legitimate purpose. You know, I mean, we've seen enough over the years of abuse so that, you know, what's legitimate for one person is clearly not necessarily legitimate for the balance of the community. And that really concerns me when you...
I would agree that we don't want to deal with self-certification, but if we can try to find well-defined protocols for certification that could be implemented by a jurisdiction with authority to do that, then it's not self-certification, but it's still a use-based certification rather than a category-based certification.
This is David Ferris. Have we moved away, Milton, from your comment and moved on to the point of certification? Because I do have a comment about the document.
About what?
The sentence that says none of these proposals incorporate well-defined rigorous methods for pre-certifying. Do you want to? My question is: do you want to finish your first question, which is there no? Is the statement that there is no agreement about private parties accurate reflection of the?
Yeah, I would like to find out if we can say something better than that. whether there is some construction of agreement there, but I think that we just heard restated the basic problem. Which is that if the problem is going to a problem of certifying access is going to be manageable, we start talking about categories and distinctions, which may use as a basis for excluding some people and permitting others to have access. On the other hand, as Dan points out, those categories may not match up with actual need and or legitimate need, I should say. Need itself, I don't think anybody believes. Qualifies you for access to this data. It has to be some kind of protection against criminal or fraudulent activity. So that's the basic.
Excuse me, Melissa Rotino, and I joined the call.
And I haven't seen any magic ways of getting out of that conundrum yet.
Okay, just so I can put myself in the queue, I do want to talk challenge notion being asserted that. That self-certification is not justified.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay, it relates to the sentence that I was talking about under the section on private parties, that none of these proposals incorporated well-defined rigorous methods for pre-certifying the legitimacy of private parties, private actors. I think that that's a subjective statement and that we should remain factual in this. There are precedents for self-certification. And I would use the EU-US safe harbor as one of those examples, which is addressing privacy, where private actors self-certify that they are complying with a set of privacy principles, and there's an ex post facto review if a problem arises. So I think there's been government mandated and recognized self-certification processes, and I think that we should just provide a more factual statement here that most of the proposals included a self-certification for legitimate private actors, relying on some form of affidavit in the ex post threat of discovery of abuse. Because I think that there's a disagreement in this group about whether pre self-certification, regarding self-certification and pre-certification.
Yeah, I think, let me just... I understand sort of why you made the objection, but in terms of the actual meaning of the statement, the actual language there, it really isn't any different from what you said. Maybe I can remove some of those adjectives, like well-defined and rigorous, but the point was that the proposals are not talking about pre-certifying. They're not talking about filtering people out before they get access. They're talking about giving anybody who wants access, access, and then filtering them out based on ex post discovery of abuse.
I would be fine. I would be fine with that, Milton. So if it were to read something like, none of these proposals incorporated a mechanism for pre-certifying the legitimacy of private actors, most relied on, I would be fine with that.
Okay. And
that's a factual statement.
You're right. I should probably note that there is a disagreement, which we just heard from Ken and from Dan, about self-certification as a method, which again goes back to the unfortunate first statement of the paragraph. Well, let me ask this. Is anybody who doesn't like self-certification convinced by David Ferris's mention of the EU Safe Harbor precedent?
This is Dan. I think from a privacy advocacy point of view, the legal environment that we're living in today is transitional and not to be seen as etched in stone, and perhaps there's room for improvement. So I would say I'm at this point not yet convinced.
Milton?
Yes.
It's Ken Stubbs again. I have to apologize for my skepticism, but having just spent 10 days in Venezuela, I hope you can understand where I'm coming from. You know, I mean, from a practical standpoint, I'm still very concerned about it, because if you, for instance, take the proposal that Michael surfaced here, where some of the definitions are combating socially abusive uses of the Internet and helping users identify people responsible for online content and services, I just see still too many opportunities for abuse in the self-certification process. And I just frankly need more clarity as I see it. You know, maybe I'm just too skeptical. I don't know.
All right, so I think that answers my question fairly well, and so we're still stuck with disagreements here, but maybe we've phrased it a little bit better.
Well, this is Wout, Otsa.
Yes.
What I do think, there is agreement that private third parties, whoever they are, have a right to litigate, or whatever you call it in English, against perpetrators. I think that is something we all agree on. But after that, it's how do they, after a due process research, get the information they need about who is behind websites or domain names or IP numbers, whatever. But we do agree that everybody has a right to do the research.
Good point. Maybe we should open that paragraph with that statement, that private third parties have a right to... of course, to litigate, but even stronger, to investigate.
Through due process.
Through, well, yeah.
I think there's a difference of opinion on that.
There is a difference. But private third parties have a right, certainly, to initiate various kinds of action against people who they believe are violating their rights, defrauding them, stealing from them, whatever, right? We all agree about that, I hope, or don't we? I mean, I shouldn't express an opinion.
If it's a question,
I agree with that statement.
Yeah.
Unless, then you have your way, at least, to look at what do these parties need to to be able to investigate. And what do you...
It's a question of what they have a right to investigate. It's not a question of need. In other words, it would be nice if, you know, every time I... the person who scraped my car, if I could go to the internet and type their driver's license in and see what their home address is. But I don't have that right. And
no, but you don't have the right to access that directly, but you do have the right to get that information through due process, which I think you call it.
Yes, and that's a very important distinction.
And this is a distinction, I know, but then you can look at the ways that these private third parties can reach at that. But the basis is that everybody has a right to, but if you call it investigate, that's a fine definition by me. So that's my
idea. Well, I think
that's
a good point, and we should put that up at the top of that paragraph, that we're recognizing this, and the problem is our disagreement about the conditions through which these private actors obtain access to otherwise private information. It doesn't move us very far in terms of a policy, but at least clarifies what the obstacle is. So should we move on to the sectoral issues? Again, I came out of the last week call with a very strong view that that there simply was not a consensus that we should devote our time to a sector-specific proposal. Palmer took issue with that, so maybe Palmer, again, we're not talking about the merits. We know you believe in the merits of a sector-specific proposal. We're talking about how much support there is for that.
Well, Milton, my objection was simply the use of the terms agreement, alternate view, etc., because it seemed to me that it would be necessary, and I understand the desire not to harden positions, and I'm not suggesting we move to a formal voting process, but since we're not going to have formal voting process, I was simply suggesting that we not use terminology that's suggestive of a formal process, and that you could say there's a lack of consensus as to whether there ought to be sectoral differentiation without using that terminology.
Well, you remember when I called for a straw poll to determine agreement or its absence, I was slapped on the wrist.
Right, and I'm not suggesting we should move in that direction. All I'm saying is, absent doing that, I think we need to avoid the terminology.
So is this a process problem, Palmer, or is there a substantive point that we're missing here?
Well, it has the de facto effect, I think, of taking out of consideration this at the next stage, by suggesting that there's no support for it, and therefore the working group doesn't need to consider it.
I think that's a very accurate
statement. That's Derek.
This language might have that effect, yes.
If I may, well, we're using the term sectoral. We're talking about the how or the who, correct? Completely. That's what it means.
Yes, it means a well-defined
who?
Sector of actors who have something in common.
Okay, and then on the next word was, Palmer, you have a problem with the term agreement?
I'm just thinking that if we use that terminology, when it goes to the next stage, the working group takes it up, the working group will say, oh, well, there is no support for this position, therefore we don't need to give it any serious consideration.
I didn't see it as a global concept that Milton was referring to. I think no matter what, you have to take the consensus found in a working group as within context. If someone wants to take it out of context, they certainly can, but it would be inappropriate. I think I understand your concern, but I don't think it's a fair one because it would be a misuse of the language rather than a proper use.
I'm sorry, who was that?
That was Eric?
Oh, Eric. Okay.
This is Dan. I would just point out that this terminology kind of comes from the charter of the working group, where there was this sense of, you know, agreement, support, or alternate views, and that, you know, agreement is based on a consensus process. So seems to be our charter, what, you know, what's been given to us to work with.
Right. It definitely is. Indeed, it's what the working groups are for, the subgroups are for, and ultimately the working group. Now,
Milton, could I get in the queue? This is Steve.
Okay. The fact that there is no consensus in this working group about a banking-specific proposal, Palmer, it does not help you when you get to the larger group. But it does not fully preclude it from consideration. It may be that you would work your persuasive magic on other people in the interim, or it may be that somehow people would see that focusing on this narrow problem in the future deliberations of the full group would maybe make some progress where they thought more progress was possible, but then they discovered that it wasn't. So I don't think we can avoid the fact that there simply isn't agreement on this. And by agreement, I don't think we need to take a vote of any kind. I think what I was told last week, and I think is correct, is that we put a proposition before this group, and we listen, and we say, do people agree with this or not? If nobody disagrees, then we say it has agreement. We don't need to take a vote. If somebody disagrees, but only one person, then we might talk about rough consensus. And if a few people disagree, but it seems like everybody else agrees, then we might talk about support. That's my understanding. Okay, so, Steve, you had something to say.
Yeah, I just was raising the question of whether the subgroups are supposed to be a filter or a funnel or just what the right metaphor is. It wasn't my understanding that that anything that's put on the table in the subgroup would automatically be excluded from further consideration in the working group as a whole. I thought the idea was to surface proposals, to try to narrow the range of proposals if possible, and then to bring the proposals to the full working group with some indication of the level of support, but not that anything would fall off the table necessarily.
I think we agree. I mean, again, as I said, if Palmer, well, let me just give me my own perspective, is that if I thought at this stage that we couldn't get agreement on anything, and as soon as we realized that, people thought, well, let's do something about banks, at least we'll get something done, you know, if that happened a month from now, I might go along with it. But, I'm not trying to commit myself to anything in the future, but the point is people could change, but I think at this stage the agreement is pretty much as I stated it. Certainly, I think we all agree, including Palmer, that a solution encompassing all legitimate users would be preferable to one restricted to a sector.
This is Wald?
Yes.
I think the word sector might not be the right one. Let's consider this just an example. The Estonian government is being bombarded, or all institutions in Estonia were bombarded last week or 2 weeks ago by somebody just stopping their infrastructure. That is something that needs to be looked at quite in a very fast and prompt way. So I think what the distinction should be, what is the urgency of the need for the information the specific subject has. So that might mean in the form of banks, not as a sector, but as a phishing problem, then the urgency to stop that and to help and protect end users might give a completely other view than that it's a bank or a trademark or a copyright which will have to have some sort of slower process of investigation, and they do not need this information straight away. Well, in other, like the Estonian example, but probably many others of attacks that happen on the internet, you need to have information fast to shut websites or whatever servers or computers down. That, I think, if you look at it from that way, that might help to get your consensus faster than looking at a bank or PayPal or a Coca-Cola, whatever, Louis Vuitton bags.
But I think that is how we're looking at the problem. We mentioned in the report the high incidence of phishing and the high financial stakes.
Right. But we keep coming back to the word sector and the word. But I think we drop that and focus on problem, that we might be able to reach some sort of agreement faster than if we keep looking at the word bank or the word Visa card or whatever.
But that's
my point.
The point is that not all of the subjects of phishing are governmentally chartered banks. Credit cards and PayPal and those kinds of, even AOL, I think, is subject to phishing attacks.
And all sorts of online companies are subject to attacks because they're being bombarded in denial of service attacks, and then they get an extortion email. You want to know where that comes from too, very fast, if you're that sort of company.
That's right. So
if you look at it from a problem perspective, which is much wider than just phishing, then we might have a way of who needs access in what way and how fast and who is going to give that access.
Milton, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue when you get here?
Yeah.
That's my point, so thanks.
I understand the point, but I think you're actually reinforcing the problem with the sectoral approach, is that you're talking about urgency of the problem, regardless of how it is concentrated on a particular sector.
All right.
And the proposal that we're talking about is indeed concentrated on a well-defined sector. So that's the debate we're having, is that should we prioritize a sector or something else? Okay, Steve?
Yeah, it may be that part of the problem is the template we've been working with. I mean, the first column, the second column is which third parties. You basically have to answer that question before you can complete the rest of the template. And I think what Welch is talking about is maybe the right question is what types of problems are to be addressed. And that obviously has some congruence with which third parties, but as he points out, phishing is not simply a problem for governmentally chartered banks. I think actually if you look at the blended proposal, it kind of has some of this in there, because it's not only which third parties, it also addresses what types of queries would be accepted in this process. But maybe that's the reason why we're having so much trouble on this section, is that we're asking the question of who rather than the question of for what purpose.
That's very well defined. Thank you. This is Dan. I would concur with a lot of what's been said here. I was one of the people that also concurred with the alternate view that that we could use the bank proposal as a model or a test case for developing a broader solution. I think one of the reasons that seemed sensible is that in the case of the bank sector, there are law enforcement processes and structures that are set up that seem to be amenable to query screening model that was proposed. And because we know that there are perhaps more difficulties in other sectors with a proposal like that, focusing on a bank solution as a starting point allows you to focus on just part of what the issues are without having to get into all of them. And then as you expand to, you know, beyond financial institutions, then the issues of jurisdiction become more important.
Okay. Well, again, I think Yes, I think we pretty much, or at least I pretty much figured out long ago that the issue was not so much who, but what type of problem. And that's why we started with this basic distinction. And when we said who should have access, one of the categories was anyone. Remember, Steve? And you objected to that. The point being that if you say anyone could have access, then the issue becomes, well, what is the nature of their problem? And that requires some kind of fairly serious and potentially manual filtering. And we never got, you know, beyond that point. We never got proposals for, you know, seriously...
Milton, it either could require that or it could require some form of self-certification with a mechanism for dealing with abuse.
Right.
And that there are several proposals out there that have that feature, and that, you know, at one point you dismissed Michael Warnke's proposal because you said it was too complicated and had too many tiers in it. It had too many different types of people, types of entities that might be able to gain access. But, if we focus on the problems, and if we can list the problems that would be the justification for access, then that's not such a big issue.
Well, if you could narrow down the problems to the point where, it's not people saying, I want to know whether a domain name is for sale.
Well, we started that process, I think, and I think there was, that one may have been struck off the list. But, I think that may be a way to proceed, is to look at the types of problems that we need to solve. And working from the bottom up, there are some that don't require access.
But the issue was not just identifying problems that would require access. It's a process for, a scalable process for filtering through those. And also there was a lot.
Well, I think there have been scalable processes proposed that involve self-certification. I know not everybody agrees with that, but all I'm saying is that there is some support for that in the task force. And
okay, Steve, can I finish my sentence?
Go ahead.
That's the second time you've cut me off in mid-sentence. The point is, we just had a discussion about self-certification. And there's a lot of agreement about that. A lot of concerns about that. So,
Milton, this is Dan. I would also suggest that the more recent proposals have a kind of a two-tiered certification paradigm, where there is a pre-certification of those eligible to have query to be able to make queries in the first place, and that first step would probably be manual, but on a fairly sporadic basis. And then when you get to actual specific queries, that's where the process gets more automated and is on a more timely basis. So it splits the manual part off to something that doesn't need to scale quite as much, and then the stuff that really needs to scale, that's where you look to try to automate the process as much as you can through well-defined protocol.
Yes, all of which requires completely new systems to be developed. Which
that's right.
Which is something that my understanding is that the registrars and registries are not thrilled about.
I would not be asking registrars and registries to develop the system. I think it probably is something that ICANN should coordinate. I would even suggest that it might be possible to do this through an open source project to reduce costs, increase standard interoperability, increase security, and reduce user fees.
One question I don't understand is, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about a protocol to facilitate the data, or is it about the, I want to call it, the accreditation process for someone to be able to have access to the data?
I think it's more on the access side, and actual queries would still go through the registrars, of course, but once the data has been queried by someone who has got authority, then this is a mechanism of granting provision of that information indirectly to other third parties, and that doesn't need to involve the registrars at all.
Okay, so we're going to have to move on, but what I would like to see is if you believe that progress can be made here, then I would encourage you to work with others to develop a truly blended proposal, one in which is not restricted to banks, and which takes into account the discussion we just had, and also the agreement points about the types of access, and incorporates this two-tier notion of a first manual path for certain parties. And
actually, Milton, if I can interject very quickly there, I would like to see a policy discussion. Today we've had a lot of discussion about process. We've had a lot of discussion about implementation. I've heard very little about policy. What I would like to see in terms, personally speaking, in terms of a blended proposal is something that deals with the policy implications. Talk of manual and automatic and technology and open source and security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, at least at the level that we're discussing today, are all very much operational concerns and not policy concerns.
Yes, I stand corrected, and I think that's a very important and good point. What we do want to be talking about policy, that's why we have these ideal type of access, and we're trying to decide what kinds of access should be provided, not about implementation.
I would agree with that, Milton. I would just say that I think that some of the policy considerations were in danger of being vetoed by claims that they were not possible to be implemented.
Yes, that's my point, is that the when we talk about a blended proposal or some kind of a consolidated proposal that incorporates and might build more support than the usual one, I'm talking more about how it handles the basic policy trade-off and not about whether it's open source or, using a particular protocol. But the question of, who will this actually give access to? What potential will it have for abuse? What safeguards will it have? And is there agreement on those basic policy principles? What would be the role of public law enforcement agencies versus private parties? That's something that we can talk about policy on. So feel free to take up that gauntlet. Now, moving on to the degree of access, again, we identified these four different types, and we concluded with a statement, there's agreement that LEAs be granted at least type 1 access and support for type 2 access. Is this, people see that as accurate? As a policy statement.
So this is Val from Opta. I would like to bring something in which might clarify things, but I have to say a few things first. I want to make clear again that OPTA is an independent Dutch authority, and we do not represent any other LEA in the world, nor any EU country, government, or institution. We just represent ourselves. So if we say anything, then it's on third-party access, it's just to help the process and nothing more than that. And if we talk about LEAs, we just talk about ourselves, which I think is a very important distinction to make. We have the idea that we do not have much decisive influence on which either way this discussion is going, which might be a bit frustrating, but it also makes it very hard to take any responsibility for the advice or the conclusion of this working group. So that's something with which we are not going to accept whichever way it comes out. It's not something which we are going to take responsibility for. Any other outcome for OPTA, which is less than number two, and we go for number three, really, is not acceptable, because we will probably not be able to do our job anymore if we are going to be stuck with option number one. It's something we cannot work with, because then just about spam enforcement, spyware enforcement will stop full stop, really. And I mean it, and I can't stress that more than this. Why there are no other, I'm glad that the FTC is on board on this call, but I heard them on the roll call. Why there aren't any other LEAs in the world, well, when this major problem for them is so accurate and at the present, I don't know. It's just that we are in on this on our own, and we are just OPSA, I say that again, to help the discussion maybe. The EU privacy laws, which are one of the reasons why this discussion is going on, I think, in general, do not prohibit access for who is information for LEAs. It's just that it has to all go in due process. This means that we as OPSA have in our OPSA law and in the general administrative law of the Netherlands, we have the right to investigate, to get information, to sanction perpetrators of the Telecommunications Act. So that means for us that is reason enough to get access to who is data, because it's the only way we can do our job. And maybe consensus is not reaching this working group because of this misunderstanding that EU privacy laws do not prohibit access to who is information. So I think this is very important for you all to understand that we as OPSA have a job to do, given by us through the law, and if we do not have access to this essential information to find perpetrators, then we'll probably be the end of safeguarding the internet against guys like these. That is something that I wanted to say to the group, but I also would like to find out in which way can OPSA, and the FTC is now listening, have influence on this group, because we don't have any sort of stature, and why that is, I don't know. I don't know how ICANN works. It's just I'm something completely new to this. But we do need to have some stature and some decisive influence, and I don't think that we are having that at this moment, especially not when we go back to the main group, when the other people are going to be involved, and after that on the GNSO board. Where is our meaning being heard,
okay,
in our opinion. So that's something I wanted to say, and that it's very important for institutions like OPSA to have access.
Yes, yes. Well, everybody understands that law enforcement agencies like yourself have particular interests and needs that they are pursuing through this process. I think the broader issues of how you participate in the ICANN process is really way out of scope for this working group.
I know that, but it is important in the end.
Now we have about 5 minutes left, and based on what you said, as it relates to the three statements, again, we're not talking about policy prescriptions here. We're talking about how much agreement there is on policy prescriptions. And I think it's very important to establish that. So you said, there is support for granting LEA Type 2 access. You said that you wanted Type 3 access. I think that may not be correct in the sense that Type 2 access basically is the same as Type 3 access. It simply contains some kind of record keeping and auditing that means that you're not using it for random data mining. And my understanding of both American and EU law is that, a law enforcement agency does not, have a right to look up the domain name address of an internet user that the law enforcement officer thinks is pretty and might want to contact for a date, right?
We totally agree on that. It's just that we see too many undefined words in the number two, which could go anywhere when defined. And then the question remains, is there still a good access or not when everything is defined? So that's probably the point I would make last.
What is undefined about query-based access to any domain?
I haven't got it by hand, but there's a few words in there which could limit the access, and that's the one of the fears we have.
No, it's contractual legal restriction of queries to records of particular domains and or registrants causing problems at a specific time, i.e. no indiscriminate data mining. So if you have problems with specific words, let's talk about how to modify those words.
All right, I'll get back to that.
No, can you add Carol to the queue?
Yes, Carol.
I'll do that now, but we can get back to that.
Okay. Carol?
Two quick points. I have to support what my colleague from OPTA is saying. Sometimes the devil is in the details, or in this case, I think the devil may be in the definitions. We may not all be coming from the same definitions, or the definitions may, the words may have different definitions in our countries. When we say no indiscriminate data mining, let me give you an example, and you tell me whether that falls into bad data mining or good data mining. Let's say I get a complaint of somebody selling toxic drugs over the internet, and innocent members of the public are purchasing them in good faith, thinking that in fact these are safe drugs to consume. I'm going to pick, you know, something generic like aspirin, but it's not the real aspirin. Okay, I don't want to besmirch someone's name. Anyways. So they launch a complaint with the police. The police start to investigate, and we find company XYZ has been registered with one register. We now want to go and see if they've been savvy enough to register in a number of different locations. Is that considered indiscriminate data mining or not?
Clearly not. I mean, you have a name of a suspected perpetrator who you're searching based on that, right?
Right, but I may be searching for a couple of different variations of that name because not everybody always uses the same name when they set up, if you will, dummy companies as part of a criminal offense. So would that constitute indiscriminate data mining? I mean, I appreciate your example of running checks on all of our friends and family and wholeheartedly agree with you. If it's not in support of a police investigation, those queries shouldn't be run. But sometimes in support of a police investigation, we need to run, if you will, associated queries. But the name won't be identical every time. I may have spelled Carol Bird with an E in one case and without an E in another.
Yeah, I think if all of our, if your concerns are limited to that, then we really don't have a serious problem because these are just verbal clarifications, and we seem to be in agreement on the basic policy, which is that law enforcement agencies in pursuit or in support of a investigation given fairly broad kinds of access, as they can now under due process. You know, you could subpoena all the records of an ISP under certain kinds of legal investigations that go well beyond the who is record data. I just don't see that as a problem. If you have a problem with the wording, if you want to avoid certain misunderstandings, then all I need are some suggestions as to how to fix that. I think we can fix that.
Okay, because I think a lot of the misunderstandings come under different people having different definitions for certain things such as indiscriminate or due process. The other point I wanted to add, Milton, is subsequent to our last teleconference, I did in fact check with our Access to Information Act and Privacy Act section within the RCMP. Just to get clarification on degree of access number 4. And in fact, if let's say we were, the RCMP had access to the WHOIS database, and someone came and asked us to run a query for them, unless it is pursuant to an investigation, we can't pass on that information. So I just wanted to say I checked it with our sector that deals with the legislation in Canada, and it's just not something we can legally do, and I just wanted to add that clarification in there.
This is about this is the same as for OPTA, because it's in our OPTA law, even the insurrection law of OPTA, that we're not allowed to do this. So, but I had already mailed that to the group.
So you said unless pursuant to an investigation, you can't pass it on. Does that mean...
Unless pursuant to a police investigation, particularly by the police agency that has access to the data. So if, for example, somebody came to, let's say we had access to the data, and somebody came to us, but they wanted something pursuant to a civil action, not a criminal action, then I don't think legally we can provide it. Therefore, you know, perhaps, and I know I'm throwing this out at the 11th hour, option number four should be indirect access via governments and let the governments of the countries identify how best to put something that would allow access in place, but respecting that country's laws. And by that, I don't just mean the police. I do mean the privacy legislation that those countries have in place.
Yeah, I think that might be a good clarification of what was intended by access type number four.
Milton, this is Dan. I would definitely concur with that. I think it's a very constructive comment. And also with regard to the terminology issue, it may be that I think data mining is considered with a very technical meaning by certain people in the technology community. And I think that sort of narrow term of art is really what was meant, data mining in the sense of looking across all the records of a database for certain global patterns in it to try to look for certain kinds of things.
Right. And again, law enforcement agencies may indeed get the right to indiscriminately data mine, at least in the U.S. they have. Whether you support that or not, different question, but it's not impossible under various national legal regimes. All right, so again, taking into account these modifications, let me again direct your attention to that paragraph at the end of the degree of access granted section. Does anybody not agree that LEA should be granted at least type 1 access? And the gatekeeper's due process. Is there anybody who does not support granting them type 2 access?
I think, Milton, could we ask the question in a different way? Could we say that, do we have agreement that they should have type 2 access? And if we don't, then voice it, then do it, we at least have support. And then you've covered off whether the base limit should be type 1 or type 2.
Well, the difference between saying, does anybody not agree, if I say, does everybody agree, then you all have to say yes. And I can't tell whether there's anybody out there not agreeing. If I say, does anybody not agree, and I hear silence, I know that you all agree. You understand why I'm doing it that way?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay, so does anybody not support granting law enforcement agencies type 2 access?
I'm still stuck on the bullet point there, Milton, because it's inconsistent with my understanding of law enforcement requirements, but if there's silence on this issue, I'm not going to pick this issue up.
What book point are you talking about?
Around auditing and record keeping of their queries. I've heard repeatedly that this would not be an acceptable form of access to the law enforcement community.
Let me step in on that one, Milton, if I may.
Okay.
Again, I think we're going to need to flesh out what kind of an audit process would be in place. So here's my concerns with regards to that. To be quite frank, if we're doing a national security investigation, we don't even share it within our department with other police officers that we're doing those investigations. They're that sensitive. It goes down to a need to know. So we would have really grave concerns with, or very strong concerns with anybody outside of our agency auditing the queries that we do. Now, having said that, there are a number of different national databases, and I suspect international, but don't quote me on that, where protocols have been established that require the agency to do self-audit and report back on the auditing results and then have firm protocols in place. For example, in the RCMP, not only do you have to sign a user statement that you're only going to use our databases for queries related to your work, but you only get access to the ones that you actually require for your particular function. And above and beyond that, for certain ones like our Canadian Police Information Center, we actually have units that go out and audit the use of the database within the RCMP. Something like that that's within the agency, I think, is beneficial. Something outside where we don't know if the people have been security cleared, where they will know about investigations that we don't even share within because they're that sensitive, because the risk is so high, that will cause a grave concern for us.
Yes, again, that's why we're not talking about implementation. We're talking about more of a policy principle here, where I'm sure everybody would agree that even national security agencies need in some sense to be accountable to national law or even international human rights norms in terms of what they do. There's always some kind of a check. You know, there's a, for example, in the U.S., there's a limited group of congressional oversight, which is very restricted in terms of how it's supposed to handle information. So as a general concept, Type 2 access simply means that there's some kind of mechanism, oversight or auditing, to make sure that it is not indiscriminate and abusive use. What those particular mechanisms are and how they deal with very special cases like national security, of course, is not something that's addressed by this.
Right, but I think maybe clarification on that point might be beneficial to avoid interpretation later of our intention that might be different than what we actually intend.
Okay, I can put something in there about special cases. It's not just national security. I mean, there might be ongoing criminal investigations where you can't reveal who you're looking at, and I'm sure that that's handled in various ways, but that there's still some kind of a benchmark of accountability, but that there are shields or protections of how the data is handled, right?
Yes, but they can be internal shields within an organization or within a government, and so I think the clarification would have to be some sort of auditing structure, be it internal to the organization or external, as yet to be determined. Because, I mean, just to give you another example, and I don't want to go into it at length and take up everybody's time, but we routinely do child sexual abuse or child exploitation investigations. Once a person's name comes out, it's very difficult to say, whoops, sorry, it turned out that they weren't the person who did it. Their computer had actually been taken over by somebody else, and it's a completely different person that did it. So there's so many cases where the information as to the type of queries we're running can't come out until, or should not in any case come out until such time as the case is before the courts, and the courts have the chance to determine whether or not, yes, the person did commit the action, or no, they didn't. Because the ramifications on the individual long term can be substantial.
Okay, but what we're maybe overlooking here is that we may be moving from support for Type 2 access for LEAs to agreement.
I agree.
Is there any disagreement here?
Well, not for me, this is Wout, but I know there are one or two persons in this group who are apparently not on this phone call, but they are completely against. And what is their stature? If we agree now, is they can they veto this? And what I also thought is that why this some sort of auditing or monitoring came in is because there are completely legitimate LEAs in the world, which we probably do not want to have a full access to with data, which is one of the problems these ladies brought in, I think. I think they're ladies. So what's going to happen when they read our conclusion of today of agreement? That's my question, more or less.
Well, object online, and we will have to move back from agreement to support. If they don't, or they will object in a larger group. So that's not an issue. I mean, we have to redraft the report and recirculate it, and we'll see what happens at that time.
But let's be clear on what we're agreeing on. Are you saying that the statement should read, there is agreement that LEAs will be granted at least Type 2 access? Is that what we're agreeing on?
No, there's... Yeah, we could be moving that LEAs be... Not at least, because there is opposition to granting Type 3 access to anybody, but we would be moving... The statement would be there is... agreement that LEAs be granted at least Type 1 access and agreement for granting them Type 2 access, maybe under the proper conditions or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know that we can make that statement. I have to say I agree with my OPTA colleague when I say our preferred option would be to have the open access in Type 3, simply because it addresses all of the issues that we currently have, And yet I know it doesn't address some of the issues some of our other colleagues on this work group have.
Right, but this is agreement across the working group, not agreement among law enforcement agencies.
No, and I concur, but I would be looking at that statement to say at least type 2, because once we say there's an agreement to type 2, it implies that we have disregarded type 3.
Well, that there is no agreement on type 3 access.
Yes, I understand that.
So that's all that it's saying. We understand that you may still want type 3 access. What we're talking about now is not what you want. We're talking about what the group as a whole can agree to.
Milton, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yes. I'm going to cut this call off after you're finished, though. I really have to go.
Okay. First, just on Carol's point, I think if everyone agrees on type 2 and some want type 3, then at least type 2 is an accurate statement. I just wanted to say that in the last sentence I would suggest that it say there's agreement that it would not be consistent with the OPOC model for private parties to be granted type 3 access. I don't think my constituency would want to be on record in opposition to the status quo of type 3 access.
Okay, I think I can do that, but the point is when the Warnecke proposal and the Ferris proposal were being discussed, they explicitly disavowed the idea that they wanted access to anybody at any time for any reason. They said, we only want this broad access because it's easier for us to pursue the people we need to pursue.
Milton, this is Mike Warnecke. Could I get in on this, please?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with Steve's point on this. I mean, that's true. I mean, we did take the perspective that we're limiting it to those situations, but it's because of the framework of OPOC, and that's what we're working with, and that's what in that framework that's what we're proposing. But I believe I was clear earlier, I mean, the status quo is something that would be our preferred approach. But in the world of OPOC, this is what we're putting forth as a second best alternative. So I don't think it would be fair to characterize my statements last week as saying that Type 3 access is something we no longer are interested in.
This is David Ferris. I think that's an accurate reflection of my perspective too. I was focusing on implementation of OPOC.
Okay, so I will modify the report, send out a draft sometime in the next 2 or 3 days.
Thank you.
Thanks, Milton.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
What is the plan for the next meeting?